Good afternoon, everybody. I know that there are certain people still walking in, but since this is our final session, I just wanted to begin by thanking the Forgash family. I don't think I see Cindy here right now, but for her leadership and vision of this entire project. It's been the two words that come to mind for me. It's really been an honor. I mean that very literally, and a real pleasure as well. Sometimes you could have something which is really an honor that's not so much of a pleasure, or pleasure it's not so much of an honor, but this has really been both. And I want to thank everybody here for that, and to say that it's really my aspiration that we'll be able to continue learning. Well, we'll see exactly what the format is and what the schedule is, but it's been, for me, such an enriching part of my week and a wonderful way to spend a Monday at noon. If any of you have had the experience of reading Charles Dickens, the Dickens was paid by the word, so he had a lot of incentive to be very long about it. But one of the features of all of Dickens' novels, Oliver Twist and Great Expectations, is that he really spends a lot of time developing threads or strands throughout these novels, and then only at the very end does he bring everything together. So I'm not sure that Dickens had read Megillas Rus, but if he had, he would have appreciated that was exactly the tactic that Shmuel HaNavi, remember the very first week we spent time discussing that Shmuel HaNavi is the author of Megillat Rut, and that's why you really have to understand Rut in light of Sefer Shoftim. So that's really the structure. So today, all of the seeds, as I like to say, that we planted over the last 5 weeks, I hope will come to a certain degree of fruition. And that's actually precisely where I wanted to begin, is to review the last 5 weeks. We won't be here for, 5 hours. But just in 2 minutes, just to distill and crystallize exactly the seeds that we planted so that we can appreciate how Perek Dalet so beautifully, I don't take any credit for this, Shmuel HaNavi is who we should all thank for organizing it so well, how all of the seeds really do come to fruition and how everything will come together. So in the very first week, if you take a look at the back of the title page here, what I call Shir Aleph Vayehi Bimei Shvod HaShoftim. So we spent a lot of time developing the idea that what Sefer Shoftim is really about is personal autonomy gone bad. When people making decisions that are only good for themselves, what you have is a lack of cohesion in society. And in particular, people in society who are, for whatever reason, unable to take care of themselves, people who would fall through the cracks. Remember we discussed leket, shichacha, and peah, those who would be forgotten behind, the shichacha, and a leket, those who were dropped. That's what leket literally means, is the crops that are dropped. And peah, those who are marginalized to the corners. All of those individuals would not be taken care of because ish hayashar beinav yaseh. And this expressed itself at the very beginning of the Sefer, vayelech ish, not given a name yet. Ish mi beis lechem Yehuda. Later on, he's named as Elimelech. But he goes because, as Chazal explained, he's a very wealthy person, and he has enough assets to be able to relocate himself to outside of the country, Eretz Moab, the eastern bank of the River Jordan. But what about everybody else who's left behind in what is ironically called Beit Lechem? There is no Lechem there. And as the Rambam explained, we quoted from the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim, even though technically it's permissible to leave Eretz Yisrael when there's a life-threatening condition, the midas chasidus, the right thing to do, the pious thing to do, is to stay behind. And Mahlon and Chilion and Elimelech are literally wiped out for that very reason. Now, in the second shir, what we developed was the idea that Ruth is really the antidote to all of this. As Naomi explains so very clearly, all of Ruth's self-interest, ha-yashar be'enav ya'asat, that which would have been yashar for her to do, would have been to stay behind. She has much greater prospects there. She'll be seen as a foreigner when she comes to Israel. There's simply no way that anybody would accept her. And in fact, we documented that, how she's treated in the fields. There's this constant strain of harassment. And we'll talk about Boaz as the exception to that. But Ruth, irrationally, so to speak, virus dav kaba, Ruth cleaves to Naomi in an act of reversal, really what was the prevailing culture of the time. And we spend time with one word, vaterek hi misametzes hi lalechet ita, that Naomi perceived that Ruth had the quality of amitzut. The only time we find that word used in Navi beforehand is in the context of Yehoshua, chazak ve'amatz. Chazak is to be strong, But to be amitz is to be courageous even in the face of adversity and to stick with it. And Ruth saw, or Naomi saw rather, that Ruth was possessed of this very rarefied and special quality of amitzut, vaterek hi misametzes hi, and that she indeed, in her own way, was able, just as Yehoshua crossed the Yarden the first time, with that quality, and only through that quality was he able to inherit the land of Israel. Ruth, walking in his footsteps, is able to cross the Yarden and come into the land of Israel. In the third shir, we developed the point of Ruth's conversion of Amechami Elokai Echelokai. You can't have one without the other. It's not enough to commit theologically to Judaism. One needs to accept the Jewish people and Jewish history. We spoke about that in a halachic vein, the Gemara in Yevamos and Daf Mem Zayin, which says that the very first thing that a prospective convert has to do is to understand Jewish history. We say, we tell them of the very difficult time the Jewish people have had with the nations, and only if the prospective convert will say, Yodea ani ve'eni chedai, I know about all this, and I don't consider myself ra'oi to be part of such a wonderful people that has sustained such tribulation and such trial over the course of its history, and I want to be part of it. Ameich Ami is the first gate, so to speak, and then we can discuss Elokai Ech Elokai. Ruth becomes the mother of converts, as we call it, the woman who's able to understand that this is a dual embrace, both of the God of Israel, but no less the people of Israel. That does not mean that everybody that she encounters in Beis Lechem treats her that way. The first thing that we saw, Vatehom kol ha'ir achareha vatomarna hazos Naomi, a kind of cynicism and sarcasm, really biting, that Naomi and Ruth are greeted with. Naomi is paralyzed by this, she's unable to really take care of herself, and that's, of course, how Ruth ends up in the fields. And once she's in the fields, that brought us to the fourth shear. Unfortunately, she's denigrated and treating very poorly. When Boaz arrives in the field and he says to his na'ar, to his foreman, Hanitzav ala kotzrim, the one who's in charge, Lemi hana'ara hazos, who is this young girl? He obviously hadn't seen her before. And so the young man says, Na'ara mo'aviyahi hashava im Naomi misde Moav. Twice he emphasizes, she's a foreigner, she's not one of us. And Boaz, three times in that second parak, we pointed it out, three times has to tell the workers in the field not to harass Ruth verbally or even worse. It's hardly a very welcoming society, and it's exactly what we would expect. Isha yashar be'inav yaseh, people are mostly concerned about themselves. Really the last thing on people's mind, everybody with the exception of Boaz, the last thing on people's mind is to take care of those who would otherwise do without. Now Boaz is different. Boaz is very different. He's the Ish Gibor Chayil, and he makes an attempt, both literally and figuratively, to inject Shem Hashem into society. The very first thing that Boaz says to his workers, says Hashem Imachem, their response, Yivarechecha Hashem, the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Nun Dalet that we spoke about, which says that Boaz was really the innovator, the pioneer of greeting people b'shem Hashem, and that Chazal at times would return to this when they felt that society was in need for various reasons, and they would return to Boaz's model of greeting people b'shem Hashem. We'll see all of these themes come up in Perek Dalet, how Boaz really was able to transform it. But I have to stop for a second because Terry wasn't here at the beginning. We have to thank Terry for putting everything together. And making all of this Talmud Torah possible. So Terry, as I'm sure all of you know, has about 42 other responsibilities on any given Monday. So we really appreciate Terry taking the time and making the time for us. Okay. So Boaz was able to inject Shem Hashem into society, and for that he's called the Ish Gibor Chayil. And that's really what set up last week's year. I know last week, because of the unusual time, thanks to Memorial Day, there were fewer people here. So very briefly, what we said is that both Ruth and Boaz are described with the term Chayil. Boaz says to Ruth, Ki yodeya kol sha'ar ami ki eishas chayilad. You are the true eishas chayil, whether or not they show it. And of course, Boaz is described as the Ish Gibor Chayil. And we went through the eishas chayil, Mishlei Perek Lamed Aleph, and we saw how many references there are. We'll review some of them today, both to the story of Ruth and Boaz and how they're really encoded. Shlomo, who's the great grandchild, the great great grandchild of Ruth, is really reflecting on that which made his matriarch so very special. Last week we developed the idea that the scene between Ruth and Boaz in the Goren is really a redemptive story of two previous stories in Tanakh. So the first story is the story of Rivka, when Rivka, like Naomi, senses that something radical has to be done to intervene and to shape the Masorah. She says to her son Yaakov, Lech Noel Hatzon, go out into the field. And of course, she has to resort to deception. In this particular case, we know that Rus does not need to use deception. Naomi is sort of playing the Rivka role, and she says, go, my daughter. She uses the term, my child. Just like Rivka uses the term, my child, with her own biological son. Rus is sent into the Goren, but she doesn't have to use any dissemblance or deception. She's able to say, Anochi Rus amasachu farasta kenafecha amasacha ki goel ata. This is me, and I need you to take care of me. We can't just have a goel on high, God, but we need to have goalim here in this world to redeem society. That was the first story that we have in terms of a woman taking a very dramatic step to shape the Masorah. And the second and more direct reference was, of course, the story of Yehuda and Tamar. And in that case, again, there was deception. Yehuda could not recognize Tamar. V'lo hikira ki chisisah fana. She had covered her face, unlike Rus, who, of course, is open about who she is. But what makes the story so important is, unlike Yehuda, he's overcome with his desire at that time, and therefore there's no other way for Tamar to become pregnant than through what would otherwise be an undesirable activity. In this particular case, Boaz, the Gibor Chayil, Ezehu Gibor, HaKoveshes Yitzro, Boaz does not want Rus to become part of the Masorah in the darkness of night and in the way that Naomi imagined. But Boaz says, we're going to handle this by the light of day. We're going to handle it tomorrow. We're going to handle it properly. And in that way, it's a redemptive story where Rus will really become part of the Masorah in a halachic setting and not, again, in any kind of an inappropriate, what otherwise be considered an inappropriate or untoward setting. And that's really where we're going to pick it up now. But before we get into the Pesukim of Perek Dalet, the only way to really read Rus Perek Dalet is to first take a look at the 25th chapter of Sefer Dvarim. And that's where Yibum is discussed. And I'd like to read these few psukim together, these six psukim, and a comment of the Ramban about these psukim. And with that, we will be fully prepared to finish up our study of Megillat Rut. The Torah says as follows, Ki yeshvu achim yachdav. When brothers are living together, halachically this means that the brothers have to be alive in the world at the same time. But again, they're not just alive in the world, but they should be taking care of each other. It should not be, in a word, ish hayashar b'inav yaseh, people only thinking about themselves, but the idea of hinei matov u'manayim sheves achim gam yachad, ki yeshvu achim yachdav, they have a sense of a bond, yachdav umeis echad mehem, and one of them, unfortunately, tragically passes away, uvein ein lo, lo sihiya eshes hameis hachutza li'ish zar. The wife of the one who passes away should not go to a strange man. Yivama yavo aleha. Her brother-in-law should marry her. Ulekachalo liisha viyivma. Vehaya bechor asher teled. And so the offspring, the first child of that union, yakum al shem achiv hames, will be literally in place of, in the stead of the brother who is deceased. Okay, so again, The issue of the second marriage, of the levirate marriage, will be al-shem. That'll be the key word today. The shem, which doesn't just mean a name, but a legacy. Rashi is of the view, by the way, that you actually have to name the child after the deceased brother. The Ramban, based on our story that we're going to read today, thinks that that's not accurate. After all, Rus and Boaz don't call their child Machlon, call him Oved. So Ramban uses that as a counter-argument to Rashi. Rashi understood that you actually... Al Shem Achiv Hames means the name itself. That's a bit of a radical view.
What if it's a girl?
What's that? The Ramban didn't ask that question, but I'm glad you did. Yes, right.
And?
Machlona. Yeah, obviously Rashi would have had to say something like that. Rashi's view is a little difficult to understand. Below Yimacheshmo Yisrael. The most important thing is that the name should not be erased. But we'll see that name, as I put it on the front today, name doesn't mean a name, like Carl or Roger. Name means a legacy. Okay? That a person has a legacy in this world. We're only here, all of us, for a short amount of time, Sach HaKol, but the idea is to leave a legacy, and that's really what Shem means in the Chumash. V'im lo yachpot ha'ish lakacha sesivim to, but if he does not want to, does not show that desire, really, he doesn't have that proper sensitivity towards Achva. The Al-Sayivim To'ashar al-Azakenim. Okay, keep all these things in mind. These things are all going to manifest themselves in the fourth chapter. V'amra, and she will say, Me'ein Yivami, he has refused. Lakim lachim shem b'Yisrael. He's refused to act as a brother, and he's refused to be sensitive to the need to create a legacy for his own brother. Lo ava yibabmi, he does not wish to. V'karu lo ziknei iro, so the elders of the city try to reason with him, they try to talk some sense into him. V'dibru elav, they speak to him, and if he still says, v'amar v'amar lo chafatzi l'kachta, he sticks to his guns. V'nikshah yivimto elav leinei azkenim v'chaltzan na'alo me'al raglo, v'yarka b'fanav, she literally disgraces him, she spits at him. This is how we treat somebody who has no sensitivity towards the meaning of achva, what it means to be a brother. And this is the important point. What happens to the brother who refuses to act as a brother? So his name, he will not be mekim la'achim shem b'Yisrael. He will not act in defense of his brother's name. You have so many over here. Just in case. There you go. He will not act as a brother. He will not act in defense of his brother's name. And this is the critical point of the fourth chapter of Rus. You'll see. V'nikra shemo b'Yisrael, the brother who will not be a real brother, beis chalutz hanal. What happens? That in his own self-interest, he wants to protect his own shame. He doesn't want to defile his shame with his brother. So what happens to his own name? His own name becomes a disgrace. V'nikrashimo b'Yisrael, beis chalutz hanal. That's very, very important. That will be the key to the fourth chapter. Now, the Ramban says about this, of course, the Torah spoke in terms of brothers, because a brother is the first line of defense. But the Ramban noted, very perceptively, that it doesn't really stop with the brothers. So the Ramban says here, this is taken from Parshas Vayeshev, not a surprise, just one second, just take a look at the Ramban, and then we'll pause for a question. V'nei nechshav l'achzarius gdola, v'ach kasher lo yachpots liyabin. When a brother refuses to stand up for his brother, it's an achzarius gedola. It's a form of unique cruelty. V'korim oso beis chalutz hanal, and he is disgraced in this way. V'chachmei Yisrael hakadmonim, the early sages of Israel, mida'atam ha'inyan anichbar hazeh, out of their own appreciation, really their own insight, the Torah only prescribed it for brothers, but chachmei Yisrael hakadmonim understood that this was so vital and so important to be able to create legacy for people who have suffered tragedy, taken from this world too early. They expanded it from brothers alone to the entire family. You can't do it with all family members, because for some it's asr, like you couldn't do this with your daughter-in-law normally. Yehuda was before Matan Torah, but you couldn't do it with your daughter-in-law normally, but let's say cousins, as what we have in our story. They called this practice not yibum, but geula. Geula is sort of yibum extended. And if the Ramban says, you want me to prove it to you, look at the fourth chapter of Rus. This is how we know that yibum, in concept, actually inheres even beyond the brothers. Yes?
Oh, just the question that was asked before. So what is the halacha if the firstborn child is a girl? Is he still obliged, like for the first boy, or he's done now?
Well, the idea is that girl is sort of considered the living legacy of the deceased brother, but we don't rule like Rashi. There's no requirement to name the child.
But the inheritance goes to her?
The inheritance is a very complicated question, exactly how it works. According to the Torah, the men inherit the nachala, but the way that it's practiced today, there's no rabbi in the world who would recommend anybody to write a will that doesn't include their daughters as well. So yes.
So, but the first child, regardless of the gender, fulfills the obligation.
That's quite correct. That's exactly right. It has to be Zara. And mind you, this is the proof is in the pudding, because if a union ends just with the girl, let's say the brother dies, but they have a daughter, that of course is even a granddaughter, that's considered Zara. There's no yibum in that case. Any Zara, whether it's male or female.
No, I'm talking about...
I know, but I'm drawing a parallel. What I'm explaining is that if they have a daughter already, you wouldn't do yibum. That's how we know that a daughter itself suffices.
Okay, understand. Thank you.
Yeah, now let's take a look at the fourth chapter. All of the themes of the first 5 weeks and all of the themes of Sefer Dvarim that we just read will now come to fruition. Uboaz ala hashar. What did it say in Sefer Dvarim? Where do you have to take the yibum scenario? It always has to go into the shar. It has to be handled. The shar is the place of the Beit Din. right? Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha b'chol she'arecha. That's where the Beit Din goes in the Sha'ar. What did we talk about last week in terms of Eshes Chayil? Noda ba she'arim ba'ala, that her husband was known in the she'arim. That, of course, is a reference to Boaz and the fourth chapter. So Boaz establishes the very next day, as he said he would, because he's an Ish Gibor Chayil, which means he does what he says, and he means what he says. U'Boaz ala ha-sha'ar v'yeshev sham. Yeshiva is a prerequisite for din. Now they're going to have the halacha. V'hinei ha-goel over, the putative would-be goel passes by, asher diber Boaz, v'yomer, and Boaz calls out to him, sura shivapo ploni almoni v'yasar v'yeshev. Now ploni almoni, of course, means John Doe, but this is Shmuel HaNavi's way of saying, we already know the story, that this person is not going to follow through. So what essentially happened to him? What became of his name? There you go, Naomi. His name is reduced. He loses his identity. Now there's an irony here. In the interest of protecting your own name, you lose your name. Because you don't want to be Mekim La'achiv Shem B'Yisrael. What happens? He goes from having a name. He had a name in the third parak. He was called Tov. He's demoted. He's stripped of his legacy and his identity. He becomes Ploni Almoni. Vayikach Asara Anashim. Yes.
Do you know who he was?
Yeah, the Chazal say he was a cousin. He was a closer cousin than Boaz was. Vayikach Asara Anashim Mizikne Ha'ir. So Boaz takes 10 Zekanim. Again, 10 Zekanim are representative of a minion. They reflect the fact that this is a halacha in the tzibor. This is not being done privately. This is being done le'enei zikne ha'ir, exactly as it said in Sefer Dvarim, that you have to get the zikanim of the city together. Vayikach asara nashim mizikne ha'ir, vayomer shavupo vayeshevu. Everybody sits down, the court is in session. Vayomer la'goel chelkan asada asher le'achinu le'elimelech. Critical word. He's not just Elimelech, but he's our brother. And whatever disapproval we have of his life decisions to leave Israel, to go to Moab, that was an act of abandonment, we understand. He's still our brother, and what we're here to do today is to take care of our brother. She's getting prepared to sell the field. V'ani amarti, and I said, Boaz speaking, Eglaz nachal emor, I'm going to inform you, k'nei neged yoshvim, neged ziknei ami, im tigal ga'al, v'im lo yigal hagidali ve'eda, ki entu laschal ligol, v'anuchi acharecha. Boaz says, here's a story. We all know you're first in line. You have to take responsibility for continuing Elimelech's line. His two sons died. We all know you are first in line. If you wish to be Goel, be Goel. And if not, I am Acharecha, and I will step up. Vayomer, and this is the part that everybody misses. So he says, Anuchi Agal, no problem. It's the right thing to do. I will be Goel the field. I'll pay whatever it costs. And I will continue Elimelech's line through me. Anuchi Agal. Now Boaz says, but wait, there's something that you're not yet fully aware of. Let me tell you the next step. Vayomer Boaz, b'yom kinoscha sadem yad Naomi, when you buy the field from Naomi acting on behalf of her deceased husband Elimelech, me'es rus ha-mo'avia, we'll relate to that in a second, eshes ha-meis, kanisa lakim shem ha-meis al-nachlasa. One more time, lakim shem ha-meis al-nachlasa. That's a quote from Sefer Dvarim. Lakim Shem La'achiv, you have to be Mekim Shem Hamet, Mace. This is Elimelech lost his two sons, Machlon and Chilion, the only descendant that he could possibly have, so to speak, not biologically, but at least in concept, would be through this woman. Lakim La Shem Hamet al Nachlaso. Vayomer HaGoel, let's look at his response. There, he's called the Goel, right? Up until now, he was willing to redeem the field. Lo Uchal Ligoli, well, I can't do it. Pen ashchis es nachalasi. Why? Because it will destroy my own nachala. Now, in choosing this word, Shmuel HaNavi is taking us back, all the way back, actually, before Sefer Dvarim, all the way back to Sefer Bereishis. In the 38th chapter, what we talked about, when we talked about Er and Onan, after Er dies, the first son of Judah, and Onan is supposed to do this Yibum, the first act of Yibum, and it says, Vishiches Arza. The Viltin is son Zara Lachiv, which literally means in that case he was unwilling to help Tamar become pregnant. Vishiches Arza. Shmuel HaNavi ascribes exactly the same word to this individual. A person who refuses to do Yibum is doing a Ma'asa Hashchasa. Literally, instead of being Mekim to be a builder, he is destroying. The first time that word appears in the Torah, it's in the context of the Mabul, Bayar Lokim es Aretz v'nei Nishchasa. The world could either be civilized, put together, us looking out for each other, constructive, or it could be destroyed. And in effect, this would-be Goel, this Ploni Almoni, is choosing to be a Mashchis and not a Mekin. Just as Er and Onan, exactly the same word. Ge'olacha ata eskulasi kilo uchaligol. I can't do it. Now, a little bit of an informative pasuk. Vizos lefanim b'Yisrael al gulav al tmura lekayim kol davar. This is how it was done, to signify that the transaction was complete. Shalaf ish na'alo v'nasan l'reehu vizos hatu'uda b'Yisrael. This was the public testimony in Israel. Vayomar goel levoaz, kineilach v'yishlof na'alo. It's a dispute. It's machlokes, who removed whose shoe, but we'll leave that for now. The shoe is removed. The transaction is complete. Vayomar boaz lazkenim v'chol ha'am. Eidim atem hayom, ki kanisi es kol asher l'alimelech.
I am now the Goel. Right? Who was the one who gave him the idea of being the Goel? Of course, Rus. She says, Ufarasta kenafach lamasacha. That's what we said in chapter 3 in the fifth shir. Ki Goel ata. She inspired Boaz to act as the Goel. And he says, and now he says it very publicly, that he is the Goel. I am the one who has taken responsibility. Yes?
I think I'm missing something that's simple. I thought Yibum was that you marry the sister, the wife of your brother.
Correct.
And you have a child.
Of the deceased brother, yes.
What does this have to do with the field?
The idea here is this is not a technical case of Yibum because it's not between two brothers. But the idea here is that there's this property, there's this legacy which is attached to the land, which is also lying fallow. There's nobody to take responsibility for that. So the way that Boaz, is the Torah in Parshas Bahar says that if a person is unable to take care of their own field, that there has to be a goel, hopefully, v'kama goel ha-karov elav, that a person from the family is supposed to redeem the field and help that own branch of the family. So here we're combining sort of Parshas Bahar and Parshas Kiseitse, taking the responsibility that every family member has individually towards the field, putting that together with not a technical yibum, but as we said, the Ramban in Vayeshev Perek Lamed Ches, what he called the geula, the expanded yibum, putting those together, and that's the transaction.
So in this case, it was a package deal.
That's correct.
And the goel was willing to do the marriage, but not...
No, the opposite. He was able to do the real estate, but not the marriage.
He says, ki ashchis et nachlasi.
It's an excuse. He's saying that if I marry her, it'll be bad for my nachla. She's
for
a malafiya.
Yep. Oh, for his...
It's not a serious argument.
He's not bad for him that he's getting an extra
no,
field in the
process.
No.
So
what's bad for him, though?
He doesn't want to marry her. She's a Moabite.
Why did he say yes, I'll be the God?
Because he said yes. No. He said yes to the field.
He only said yes to the field.
Right? Remember, he said yes to the field. He doesn't know about Rus. Okay. And then he says, oh, but you have to understand that comes with Rus. And he says, no, that's bad for my field.
Okay.
It's a failure. It's a failure of character. Yes?
Did Boaz have the personal
I think he did it in good faith.
Okay, so
I think that's a good question. That's a judgment call. I think he did it in good faith.
Okay, so he would.
And I think that's remember if Boaz wanted to jump the gun, he had the opportunity the night before, right? So Boaz, I think, has great respect. That's what we were talking about last week. How Boaz has great respect for the halachic process, and great respect for the way that this is supposed to develop. And that's part of the Ish Gibor Chayel HaKoveshes Yitzro, even though, he would have liked to marry Rus at that particular point in time, he's able to do it properly. And I think it's a legitimate and good faith transaction.
He gave
every opportunity.
But he's making sure to use the language that will show them the full implications of the potential.
Correct. That's exactly right. Yes, Naim.
Is this Ploni Almoni the same Goel that was told?
That's right. So now that's the argument that he's demoted. He becomes Ploni Almoni. He loses his name. If you look at the psukim that we read from Sefer Dvarim, v'nikra shemo b'Yisrael beis chalutz hanal, that person goes from having a shame to being denigrated and demoted, really loss of identity. Yes, Terry.
Just in good faith, just in response to that earlier question, why does he refer to
Ruhamoviyah?
That's already...
Oh, okay, good. Excellent question. So I wanted to wait one more pasuk to address that, but let's do it now. So previously we noted in the second chapter that every time she's called a Moabiyah, it's a denigration. So what Chazal, and I know that's exactly where you're coming from, it's an excellent question. So what Chazal explained is that it was not well understood that when the Torah says, Lo yavo amoni u'moavi bikal Hashem, gam dor asiri, that even 10 generations Amon and Moab can't enter in, the halacha was always, though it wasn't well known, and it certainly wasn't broadly appreciated, that it was Amoni velo Amoniyah and Moavi velo Moaviyah, that there was no problem whatsoever with the women, and it's for the reason that the Torah says, the women didn't do anything wrong, al devar asher lo kidmu eschem balachem uvamayim. So the Gemara says, who were the ones that did not come out, but should have come out? So the Gemara asks a rhetorical question. V'chidarka shal isha latzeis, would it have been common at that time in society for the women to go out to greet people they didn't know, a tribe that they had not? Of course not. It wouldn't have been the women's responsibility to do that. And therefore, when the Torah banned Amon and Moab, it never banned the women. So I think what Boaz is doing here is exactly that. He's making the point, Moaviyah. Moaviyah is acceptable. She comes from Moab, but that's legitimate, and Boaz was a respected halachic authority. He was the shofet, and only by emphasizing in this very public way, remember, neged asaraz kenim, was he able to instantiate this halacha, and that's exactly the way that it's explained in the Medrash Rosh Rabbah. Yes?
Why didn't Naomi, to begin with, send Rus to this Tov person? And because that was the first in line, I don't know if halachically she was supposed to, and then, in fact, didn't want to, go to Boaz.
So there are really two parts of that answer. The first part is from the very beginning of the second chapter, where we see that Naomi is very much paralyzed. She's unable to take responsibility. Remember, it's Ruth that has to go into the fields. Naomi should have been the one who knew society, who was trying to marshal resources. So she's not really thinking clearly. What I described here is just a person who's depressed and is unable to really take initiative. It's the very definition of depression is being unable to take initiative. That's really the first point. The second point is that she lacks confidence in people. Everybody is mocking her. Only once she hears from Rus that Boaz was taking care of her in this very dramatic way. Remember, when Rus comes back, she says to her, Ve'ana asis, where did you do all of this? And she says Boaz's name. She immediately responds, Migo Alenu, who he's from the broader family. That's correct. Is that she understands that Boaz would be willing to take responsibility. He is an Ish Gibor Chayil. He's somebody who she feels has that capacity. Yeah, I think I saw a question in the corner. Yes.
But what would have happened had Boaz acted on that night? What would that have done to Tov?
So I think that, at that point in time, there would be no going back. It's that once one of the family members jumps the line, the halacha is that he jumps the line. But the damage to Rus, I think, would have been considerable. Because, again, the idea that she's a Moaviyah, and everybody would say, okay, so Boaz already married her, so he's saying that a Moaviyah is acceptable. And we've all seen things like that. And he's saying, I haven't done anything yet, but I'm making it clear that despite the fact that she's a Moaviyah, there's nothing wrong with that in halacha, and I'm not doing this for myself. I made a legitimate offer. And the capacity, and you'll see an immediate transformation. When Boaz makes this very public demonstration in front of Asaras Kenim, in the Beitin, in the Sha'ar, that Rus is to be accepted, you'll see an immediate transformation in terms of how she's received by the community. Had it happened privately at night, under what everybody would have assumed was an act of passion, but not necessarily a reasoned act of halacha, I think the damage to her would have been irreparable in terms of her role in the community. I think that's to Boaz's great credit to act as he did. Okay, so if we take a look back at the psukim, this is Pasuk Yud. Why am I doing this? Again, couldn't be more perfect. To enhance the legacy of the mace, of Elimelech and Machlon, I'm going to keep the Nachala, the actual land, together with the shame, and hopefully we will produce offspring that will be able to keep the land within the family. V'lo yikares shem hames me'im echav, Umishar mikomo edim atamayom. It's almost like Boaz is reading from Parshas Ki Seitze. Lahakim, lahachiv shem b'Yisrael, v'lo yimachash shemo Yisrael. He's using pretty much exactly the same words that the Torah uses to describe what the goals of Yibam are. Vayomru kol ha'am asher b'sha'ar, v'azkenim edim, yitain Hashem es ha'isha haba'el ha'be'isecha, kerachel u'chilaleya. You see the impact that Boaz has. This is the first time, besides Boaz, somebody is using the Shem Hashem. Yitain Hashem es ha'isha, haba'el ha'be'isecha, kerachel u'chilaleya. She is one of the community. She is following in the footsteps of Rachel and Leah. Asher banu shtehem es beis Yisrael. They were the matriarchs of the house of Israel. Va'ase chayil be'afrasa, as Boaz said of Rus, ki eshes chayilat, as Naomi said of Boaz, ish gibor chayil. Va'ase chayil be'afrasa, together, you two people of chayil will make even greater chayil. Ukirah shem beveis lachem, and the shame, the legacy, will be in beis lechem. V'hi veischa, and now this is like, without the context, this pasuk would make no sense. V'hi veischa, Boaz, who should your house be like? Keves parrots. When in the Torah do we ever refer to parrots? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, fine. But again, there's an understanding here that this is the story of Yehuda and Tamar and parrots, who of course is the issue of Yehuda and Tamar, and that first act of Yibum. Again, Yehuda didn't realize what he was up to at the time. He thought she was a zonah. V'hi beischa keves parrots, asher yalda Tamar liyuda, min hazera, asher yitain Hashem lecha, min hanara zos. Again, shem Hashem, shem Hashem, shem Hashem. The idea of shame itself, of legacy, and connecting explicitly this story back to the story of Yehuda and Tamar, because in so many ways it is the story of Yehuda and Tamar, but I'd like to say that story redeemed, where unlike Yehuda, who acted out of passion and lust, Boaz acts al pi halacha in control. Yes?
I think it's interesting that you use Rachel and Kaleah, not Kisara. Because Rachel and Leah, first of all, come from dubious surroundings. They themselves come from Laban, so just like she might have come from dubious backgrounds, she is elevated. And also, their marriage, the way that they encounter intermarriage, is through a somewhat difficult machinations of working for 7 weeks, getting swindled, coming back, and she also has this whole pilgrimage before she becomes an A-Muse.
Yeah, both parts of that, I think, are very, very well said. The first I thought of, and the second one I didn't. It's very, very, very insightful. Let me point out is that Sarah, and I think this is Rachel and Leah, all of their children become part of the Shifteka. If you go back previous generations, whether it's Rivka or Sarah, it took a while for the idea of purity, everybody coming out of there to be part of Yisrael. So Rachel and Leah mean that everything that comes from here will very much be part of Beit Yisrael. I think that may be a factor as well, but it's certainly noteworthy that Rachel and Leah are the examples that are used. Vayikach Boaz es Rus vatilo lisha vayavo elaha vayitena Hashem la herayon vatilet bein. God immediately gives a herayon. When human beings are doing what they can, God does his part as well. Vatomarna hanashim el Naomi. And now again, here's Boaz's contribution to society, greeting people b'shem Hashem. Now the same nashim who were mocking her, are really tormenting her when they said Hazos Naomi, those same women say Baruch Hashem. Asher lo hishpis lach goel hayom v'karei shemo b'Yisrael. Exactly as we read from Sefer Dvarim, that this child will have a legacy in Israel. V'hayalach lach l'meshiv nefesh. This child will restore your soul. You won't be Mara anymore, but you'll be a new person, the person that you were beforehand. U'lechalkel esev aseich, and will sustain you even as you age. Ki chalaseich asher yavaseich yiladatu, your daughter-in-law who loves you so much. And now we see that love. We don't think she's nuts anymore, but we see that she was acting out of ahava. Asher hitova lach mishiba banim. She proved to be more faithful and more sustaining for you than 7 sons ever could have. Vatikach Naomi as hayeled, vatishiseyu v'cheika vatihilo le'omenes. Naomi literally becomes the one that takes care of the child on a daily basis. Naomi goes from being depressed and paralyzed to completely revitalized, rejuvenated to the point where she's able to take care of this young child. As we know, that requires a considerable amount of energy. Vatikrena lo hashchinos shame. And it's not just that Elimelech and Machlon and Chilion have a legacy, but who else has a shame that will continue? Vatikrena lo hashchinos shame lemor yulad bein lenaomi. So Naomi, her name is restored from Mara. The child has a name. He becomes Oved. Ve'ela toldos paretz, paretz holidas chatzron. And as only Shmuel could tie it together, where does he go back? You would think he'd go back. Okay, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, maybe Yehuda, paretz. It has to be paretz because that's the story. So we're going to go back as far as paretz. Ve'ela toldos paretz, paretz holidas chatzron. V'chetron olidas Ram, v'Ram olidas Aminadav, Aminadav olidas Nachshon, v'Nachshon olidas Salma, v'Salmon olidas Boaz, Boaz olidas Oved, Oved olidas Yishai, v'Yishai olidas David. Of course, Shmuel HaNavi chose to end this with the Redeemer himself, David, Melech Yisrael, who of course becomes the progenitor of the redemptive line, Mashiach ben David, and that's the final word here in terms of what redemption can be all about. The story of Ruth is really a story about the brokenness of life. Naomi, ani mleya halachti v'rekam heshivani Hashem. That if we look inside of ourselves, we look around, we understand that life is full of brokenness. And we don't have answers to that. We'll never really be able to know why. But the one, so to speak, response that we have, it's not an answer as to, you know, what exactly is God's plan for the world, but the one legitimate response that we have, as Chazal tell us, the book of Rus is about one thing, it's about chesed. And the capacity of certain individuals to transcend their cultural environment, certain individuals, Rus, to act against her own self-interest in defense of her mother-in-law, forlorn woman, Boaz, to transcend the selfish and the xenophobic society in a very cruel, in many ways, society, as evidenced by how they were treating Rus, to act in terms of chesed, and the union of these two individuals, Boaz and Rus, these two Baalei chesed, Eishes Chayil, and an Ish Gibor Chayil par excellence, that becomes the road to redemption for Naomi, and of course for Elimelech, and Machlon, and Chilion as well. The Chazal's comment that Megillah Zo Yeshba Rak Chesed, that the only thing that really differentiates Megillas Rus in terms of chesed is very appropriate for Zman Matan Torah Seinu. The Gemara in Sotah and Daf Yadala tells us Torah Tchilasas Chesed V'Sofa Chesed, that the entire Torah from beginning to end is a book about chesed. The beginning of the Torah, God is Malbish Arumim, Adam and Chava sense that they're naked and Hashem takes care of them. The end of the Torah, Hashem is Kover Meitim, Vayikboro Sobagai, Mul Beis Po'or. Torah Tchilasa Chesed V'Sofa Chesed. Apparently, the Megillah that Chazal wanted us to read in advance of Zman Matan Torah Seinu was Megillas Rus, the highlight of which, the defining, the seminal feature of which, is the capacity of individuals to rise above society, to perform heroic self-sacrifice, acts of remarkable chesed that can literally be Meshiv Nefesh, that can bring life to people who have given up on life. And this, of course, becomes our mission as we as a community prepare to accept the Torah anew, Zman Matan Torah Seinu, to commit to that which is the defining element of the Torah, Torah Tchilasa Chesed, V'Sofa Chesed, in our own way, to try to imitate Rus and Boaz, the Ish Gibor Chayil and the Eishes Chayil, and to seek out opportunities, V'Hayalacha L'Meshev Nefesh U'L'Chalkela Sevaseich, to help restore life to those who are broken-spirited all around us. And we know the opportunities, unfortunately, are many. And that becomes the defining legacy of this remarkable Sefer. Vayhi bimei shvod ha-shoftim, ish ha-yashar beinav yaseh. What happened in a context where society was anything but supportive of those who had fallen through the cracks, Aleket Shechacha and Peah, from the most unlikely of places, from Moab, comes along a woman who literally transformed the life of her immediate family and ultimately the entire Masorah. And in so doing, was able to create a shame, a legacy, not just for Elimelech, Machlon, and Chilion, and a new name for her mother-in-law, but indeed was able to make a name and a legacy for herself. Va'ase chayil be'efrasa, v'kara shem be'beis lachan. So I want to thank everybody for the really wonderful 6 weeks that we had together. Again, I want to thank Terry and in absentia the Forgash family, and to wish everybody a Chag Sameach. I mean, there are a few questions. To anybody who has to go, I don't want to detain anybody, but Terry, do you want to make an announcement? And then we'll have the questions.
I want to thank all of you for this excellent series, and I also wanted to thank all of you who joined us for all classes.